That's right. Midnight Movie Reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com. We will also talk about the best and worst movies of 2012, which we talked about last Saturday, but we'll recap it for those who didn't get a chance to listen. We're live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower, and let's welcome Colin. Hey, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Hey, before we get into the new movies, and we'll take a look at the on-demand stuff first, I finally watched Room 237.
And?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it, and it's interesting because, you know, there's no real footage in the movie,
right?
It's all like clips from movies and clips from The Shining with voiceovers, which I found was kind of a weird structure, but somehow really worked.
And stuff from
I'm
other
wondering,
Kubrick films,
yeah.
I'm wondering if shots there's a lot of shots that take place in a movie theater, people watching a movie, and I'm wondering where that's from. Wondering if that was filmed for the documentary or not. But yeah, you're right. It's a very interesting structure.
It's
hypnotic, and just listening to these people and their explanations of this movie is just. It's thrilling.
Some of it is just. Some of it is so insane. You know, the dude with the Apollo faking the mission, the Apollo mission. That I think was my favorite nut job in the entire.
Yeah.
That one but the only one that I found kind of interesting, and I'm like, wow, was the Native American angle.
Yeah.
Like I really like right at the beginning too, because you see like the Calumet. baking soda cans and stuff. For those of you who don't know what this is, this movie is called Room 237. Is it available anywhere?
Not yet.
Okay. Room 237. It's a documentary about how many, 8 or 9 people?
6 people.
It's 6. Okay. 6 people who are completely, absolutely obsessed with Stanley Kubrick's The Shining and have these incredibly elaborate and weird and detailed explanations on the symbolism and what it was trying to do. It was really fascinating and weird and awesome. And it was just a very, very entertaining movie. So when it comes out, whenever it's available on DVD or whatever, I highly recommend it. I thought it was a lot of fun, a real lot of fun. It also made me want to, you know, it also, because of some of the clips that they were showing, it also made me want to bust out Eyes Wide Shut.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm watching the shots of Eyes Wide Shut, and I'm like, God, I got to watch this movie again.
Yeah, there's some very witty editing in this, you know, just cutting, using all clips from, I think, every Kubrick film is represented somewhere in this movie.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely
It's definitely a must for any Kubrick fan.
I agree. I totally agree. Very entertaining.
Even if you don't like The Shining, you can see it.
Room 237. That was a lot of fun. That was really a lot of fun. And didn't we have a blast Tuesday night with His Girl Friday? How great is that movie?
Oh, it's wonderful.
God,
yeah.
I love that movie.
And what a crowd.
We had a great crowd. We had a nice big crowd. Really enjoyed it. It's our weekly film, our monthly film club, the Nick DiGilio Film Club. We showed, just this past Tuesday, we showed the classic Howard Hawks masterpiece, His Girl Friday. And next month in February, we'll be showing the woefully underrated film Adventureland with Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart. A really wonderful film. Eric, I'm assuming you're not going to make it for that one.
If I can make it, I might give that film a second step.
Okay, all right. Colin, I know you'll be there because you like that movie.
I will be there.
Yes, I love that movie. I think it's great. We'll give you more details as we get closer, but that's our next film club event, which will be in February. So there you go. All right, let's take a look at our on-demand. You guys do have your lists handy, right? We're going to do that in a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So we want to recap that. For those people who could not tune in on Saturday night, we will recap the best and worst movies of 2012 with Colin and Eric. But let's jump into the on-demand. The first movie I'm going to go for here on-demand, I didn't realize it was on-demand, available yet, is one that I'm really looking forward to. I saw the trailer for it not too long ago, and I think it looks great. And I had no idea that it was available on-demand, and I may, in fact, watch it when I get home. A Glimpse Inside the Mind of Charles Swan III. Eric, explain what this is.
Yeah, I'll try. I did get to see a little bit of the movie, and I haven't had a chance to finish it yet.
Yeah.
But this is a recent Oscar nominee, Roman Coppola. This is writing directing effort, and it's a film that stars Charlie Sheen.
Right.
And a film that I think can best sort of be described as sort of his sort of version of The Singing Detective. In a way, in that it's a story of a guy that breaks up with his girlfriend,
And the movie then kind of puts, you know, literally, you know, goes inside his mind and kind of, you know, these fantasy sequences that sort of deal fantastically with, you know, his sort of version of events of what went wrong in his relationship.
Right.
And it's Charlie Sheen and Jason Schwartzman and Bill Murray and Patricia Arquette.
Aubrey Plaza
shows
yeah.
up. Yeah. Dermot Mulroney, Mary Elizabeth Winstead shows up. It's a huge cast, and I only got to see half of it so far. Very odd.
Yeah.
Very odd. I can't say completely satisfying at the point, but, you know, it's interesting because it does kind of play like a perfect little melange of what Charlie Sheen has been going through lately.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. You know, it almost seems like it was written, you know, like, I'm going to write this for Charlie Sheen and – you know, the perfect kind of movie for him.
Yeah.
But it is very odd. So
yeah,
be warned.
You know, I like Roman Coppola. I like his sensibility. And obviously there's obvious reasons why people like Jason Schwartzman and Bill Murray are in this.
Yeah.
But I saw the trailer for this movie about a month ago, and I thought it was pretty weird and hilarious. So it's available on demand right now. That's The Glimpse Inside the Mind of Charles Swan III. From Roman Coppola, which is Francis Coppola's son. And you can order that on demand, and it'll be available in theaters, I believe, on February 8th, if I'm not mistaken. All right, this is another one that I saw a trailer for, but I haven't, don't really have an interest. I don't know if you guys saw the trailer for the next one, but Bad Kids Go to Hell.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. So did Bad Kids Go to Hell, I saw the trailer for it. It looks like The Breakfast Club with ghosts.
Yeah, it's The Breakfast Club meets that movie Detention that came out last year, essentially. And the principal is played by Judd Nelson.
Yeah, I know.
doing his best Paul Gleason, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. It's murder and mayhem and craziness during the tension with five high schoolers.
Yeah, so it's basically Breakfast Club Goes to Hell with the wacky casting of Judd Nelson.
Right.
So, okay. I don't know about that one either.
Yeah.
It looked pretty bad. Now, what about My Best Enemy?
My Best Enemy, a German film, Nazis. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah. That's about all I know. I know about it.
Okay. That's available on demand. And then Celebrity, Celebrity. This one kind of looks interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, this is a story about the filmmaker is a paparazzi. The film, you know, sort of, you know, goes into the world of, you know, chasing down celebrities. Apparently he takes the view that, you know, that he's not one of the real bad people. You know, he actually gets, you know, some of the celebrities like Jennifer Aniston, Elton John, and people like that to sort of, you know, tell their stories about being stalked and hunted down and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of an inside glimpse into the world of paparazzi stalking.
Right, and it's available on it's a documentary available on demand, and it's he got a lot of big stars to talk in this movie. I mean, there's a full crew of stars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Celebrity with $, Celebrity. Available on demand starting this week. So those are the on demand movies. And what we'll do is we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump to the movies that are in theaters. And if you have a comment or a question, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Phone lines are open for your movie questions or comments. Those are the on demand movies. You can get them right now. And then we'll tell you about some of the new movies in theaters, as well as go over our top 10 lists and talk about the Oscars. All coming up right here on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. You can call us at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Colin and Erica with us, Midnight Movie Reviews every week, and this week we're going to review all the new movies. We just talked about some of the stuff that you can see on demand. We'll go back over our top 10 lists, and actually more than top 10. We're going to go through our best of and worst of lists for 2012 to recap that. And we'll talk about the Academy Award nominations, which were announced Thursday morning. We welcome Eric and Colin back. Hello, guys.
Hello. Hello.
All right. Eric, why don't you tell us about A Haunted House?
Okay. Well, Haunted House is the new film written and starring Marlon Wayans. And this is his latest attempt to spoof part of the horror genre. It's not associated with Scary Movie. You can see Scary Movie 5 coming out later this April.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that, and it looks terrible.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But it's got to be better than this. And then this one is dealing strictly with the found footage genre, very specifically paranormal activity films. There's not a whole lot to know about the plot here. It basically follows the trend that the guy and his girlfriend are in a house, and things start getting crazy. And, you know, this is a spoof, so they try to take the funny way out of these things. And two things you realize pretty quickly watching this movie. One, that there's probably not a whole lot to spoof in these movies, these paranormal activity movies. There's just not a whole lot of meat there to really drag out an 86-minute movie out of. And two, even if there was, Marlon Wayans is pretty awful at it. For about 6, 7, maybe 8 minutes during this movie, very early on, I was chuckling. I was laughing. You know, I found a couple things. There's one section of the movie later on where the couple actually tried to ignore all the stuff that's going on in the house, and I thought that that was kind of a funny little take on it. Other than that, this movie is just it's just sex jokes, and even cruder sex jokes, and fart jokes, and more scatological jokes. There's just not an original thought of how to parody these movies. There's just not, and when they don't have anywhere to go, they just goes to another sexual route. It just repeats for the entire movie. And then even like the final, you know, third of the movie, the final 15 minutes when you get into, you know, when these paranormal activity movies just get absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
And they're running around and everything's going nuts and everything's going to lead to a really horrific ending. That should have been the easiest part to spoof, and they blow even that.
Yeah.
About 40 minutes in this movie, Nick Swardson shows up.
Ugh.
And this is film critics need to make a deal with studios, and it's very simple. It's like whenever Nick Swardson shows up in their film, film critics are allowed to just walk out, and no hard feelings. That's just the way it is. Just like, you know, no harm, no foul. He shows up, we get to leave, and we don't get to talk about your movie. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Because he shows up, and he's not even the absolute worst thing about it, though he's close. This is a pretty awful movie.
It's terrible. It's not funny at all. I laughed a few times. There are certain people in this movie that I think are funny.
Yeah.
I think Cedric the Entertainer is funny. I think J.B. Smoove is hilarious.
Yeah.
But there's not even really a script here. There's just nothing.
No.
I mean, there's no satirical point of view. There's nothing. It's nothing but fart jokes and sex jokes for 80 minutes.
The only recurring gag that I thought was kind of funny, and they even wear that out pretty quickly because they don't even go to it, is that everyone keeps running into the frame with the giant cameras.
Right.
That they're filming people with. Like, I thought, okay, that's kind of clever that, you know, these people are running around with the giant, you know, cameras with the microphones on it, you know, filming this footage. That's kind of funny. But then they drop even that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, this is bad. And I couldn't agree with you more about Nick Swardson. What, has he ever been funny in anything?
Not in the movies.
No?
I mean, no.
Colin, ever?
No. I'm saying no. Definitely not.
Let me look at what he's got here.
Reno 911 on television.
Even if he was a long time ago, we'd probably watch it and reassess whatever made it funny.
Yeah.
That's just based on the crap that's come since then.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. Oh, God, he's got that TV show Pretend Time, too, which is awful.
Never seen it. Won't watch it.
30 minutes or less. Jack and Jill. Bucky Larson. Just go with it. Reno 911. That's okay. The TV?
The TV stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bedtime Stories, The House Bunny, You Don't Mess with the Zohan. Oh, he's
I don't
been
remember in, him in The House Bunny.
He's, by the way, he's a Playboy photographer on The House Bunny.
Don't remember.
He was also in an episode of According to Jim, so he's right at home there.
Oh, there you go.
I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
Oh, my God.
Blades of Glory. Oh, yeah, that's right. He was in Blades of Glory, wasn't he?
I don't remember him in Blades of Glory either.
Yeah. The Bench
Wars.
Yeah,
you blurred him out.
Grandma's Boy.
Oh. He was in Art School Confidential, which I liked, but
yeah.
I don't remember him in that either.
Not because of him.
Malibu's Most Wanted. And also Almost Famous, where he played an insane Bowie fan.
He was a Bowie fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's Bowie!
Yeah.
That's Swartzen, yeah.
There you go. Nice resume, pal. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Speaking of Malibu's Most Wanted, did you guys see the footage of that L.A. New Year's Eve show that Jamie Kennedy hosted?
No.
No, they took it down before I had a chance.
Oh, my God, is it funny? That way, it had to have been the worst television show in the history of shows. They kind of condense it down to like a seven minute collection of all the stupid mistakes and horrible things that happened. Like dropping F-bombs on the air and all kind. Oh, my God. So funny. You know, they yanked it down. They put it back up. They yanked it down. I don't know. I would search for it. I think there might be some website that's brave enough to keep it up there before they got a hold of it. But, man, it's definitely worth seeing. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live from the Allstate Studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower for our weekly Midnight Movie Reviews. We're covering all the new movies. We told you about some on-demand films and the terrible new comedy, A Haunted House, which is just unwatchable. And we welcome Colin and Eric back to answer some questions and to jump back into the movies. Before we get into the – welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Before we get back to the movies, this is Judy in Chicago with a question. Hi, Judy.
Hi. There are two films that just got released, got great reviews, 4 stars, and they're not playing anywhere in Chicago. One of them is Quartet. It's not even playing in Highland Park. You know, Highland Park is the king of the artsy-fartsy movies.
Quartet will open next week here.
Oh, okay. And the other one...
I'm sorry, what? I'm sorry, go ahead. Eric, go ahead. What?
25th.
The 25th? So a couple of weeks. It'll open in a couple of weeks.
Okay, and then there's one that got great reviews. It played for 1 week, and it's disappeared, called Not Fade Away.
Not Fade Away is still out.
I don't see it anywhere.
As of Tuesday night when we did our MovieCo screening, it was playing at the MovieCo theater right in the theater next door to where I was showing His Girl Friday.
Okay, but, you know, now they have the movies change on Friday.
Right.
I don't see it anywhere.
Well, nobody went to see it. It tanked. Didn't it tank, Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
It's supposed to be great. I'm surprised.
It's not great, Judy.
Oh, it isn't?
No.
I thought
if you liked the Stones music, you love them.
No, it's not about the Stones.
Not at all about the Stones. Well, there's a scene that involves the Stones, but it's not. It doesn't. It's not about the Stones. It's about.
It's still playing at a couple theaters. The Marcus Addison and the Marcus Gurney. So you're gonna have to go way out into the burbs.
Well, there you go.
It's not worth either trip.
Yeah, I wouldn't go for it. Quartet opens though. Quartet is fine. It's not great, but it's, you know, we're gonna review that in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
All right, Judy.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. There you go.
We prefer a late Quartet.
Yes. That's the better of the Quartet movies.
Yes.
Of this year. And which I can't believe there have been 2 Quartet movies.
And both of them played Toronto.
Did they?
They're both Quartet movies were playing Toronto. I went with the late Quartet.
Yeah. Well, that one, you know, that one, the acting is so good in that one. And, man, you know, what a good year for Christopher Walken.
Yes.
Really strong year for Christopher Walken. I mean, not doing the crazy Walken stuff, but just like acting. And that was fun to watch. Okay, all right. Let's hear from Colin. Colin, tell us about Amour.
All right.
The very happy movie French. Amour. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the French film from Michael Haneke that is nominated for best foreign film, best actress, best director, and best picture.
I believe I have that right.
I think you're right, yes.
And it tells the story of an elderly couple who are having breakfast one morning when suddenly the wife, played by Emmanuel Riva, fails to react to what her husband is saying, and she kind of drifts off, and this is sort of the beginning of the end for the two of them. She has a stroke, and now she's, you know, starting to fade more and more, both mentally and physically. Her husband, played by an actor whose name I can never pronounce, Jean-Louis Trintignant. He can't bear to send her to, you know, outside care or, you know, hospice. So he cares for her full time at their home. And they've spent their lives together, you know, teaching music, and they get paid visits by, you know, one of their students of theirs, as well as their daughter, played by Isabelle Huppert. And she can't really understand her father's insistence on taking care of his wife at home as opposed to, you know, a hospital or nursing home. And that's what the movie's about and why it has its title, Amour. This is, you know, love in its purest form, and it kind of forces the audience to ask themselves, would they go through all of this for the one they're married to? Because it's a mental, emotional, and physical strain on anybody who does. Every day is a new challenge and a test of will, and the movie doesn't flinch from that. The performances are, you know, two of the best of 2012 from two legendary French actors. And the movie is a really beautiful depiction of the end of a life between two people and, you know, the end of life on Earth. So, why didn't we mention it last week at our Best Of show? Probably because while it has all these great attributes, and I'm absolutely recommending it, it is monumentally depressing. It is like spending 2 hours in the bad wing of a nursing home. And, you know, we know Haneke, you know, takes a perverse thrill in provoking his audience. You know, he likes to mess with their heads, and he's just not a happy guy. And I'm not saying this is, you know, falls into that category, but that's the kind of director he is. This is different for him. It's definitely his most emotional film. Definitely one worth seeing. So I recommend it, but just be warned, it's, you know, not a happy film.
All right, Eric.
Everything Colin said. Times five. This is one of the toughest films I've had to watch in a while. It was so tough that I had to shut it off at one point. Gone through a little of this myself, it's watching some of the stuff depicted on screen is absolutely brutal and truthful. It hits a little too close to home for anyone who's had to even go through a fraction of what is depicted in this film. The performances are stellar, and Emmanuel Riva has really been sort of getting the lion's share of praise. She has the more showier, shakier role in the film, but I think Jean-Louis is even better than she is. I think he's tremendous in this movie. As far as Haneke provoking his audience, well, you know, he could have let, certain people in the movie, you know, go off, you know, shuffle their mortal coil in a pleasant way. But he couldn't help just punch in the gut just one more time in the movie. And I gasped out loud during the climax of this movie when you assume it's going one place and it's going there. But it does so in a way that you can only say is pure Michael Haneke. It's definitely recommendable. There's beautiful stuff in this movie, along with the tragic stuff. But I never ever want to see this movie again.
Yeah, I've been a fan of Haneke's stuff a lot. I think he's great. This one to me seems like oddly, I think it's his least cruel movie of because like, he can go like
least cruel. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not saying it's because it's not a pleasant experience to watch at all. And I don't want to ever see this movie again, ever again, either. But that doesn't mean that it's not without merit. In fact, there's a lot of merit here. And you touched on these two performances. They're stellar. They're unbelievable performances. And she deserves the Academy Award nomination. He deserved one, too. But it is just a really, really hard film to watch. And, yeah, you're right, Eric. If anybody's ever had to, you know, go through a situation that's even similar to this or deal with the fact that there's a loved one who is sick and who is going to inevitably die, this is not going to be a movie for people. You know, this is not going to be a pleasant experience for movies, because
no.
for anybody to go to the movies and watch this. It's confrontational in the way that it deals with this thing honestly and really powerfully, and in a way that anybody who's ever dealt with any situation that's even similar to this is going to be knocked out and just sobbing. It's a very hard movie to watch, but again, beautifully made, beautifully acted, deserves all the accolades that it's getting. I never want to watch it again. It kind of reminded me, it didn't remind me of, but it had the same effect on me that like a Requiem for a Dream had, which is a movie that I really admire, but I never want to ever see ever again, especially the last 15 minutes of that movie. It's different though. I mean, stylistically, it's obviously different. This is a different thing, but it had that kind of effect on me. Where I don't want to ever see this movie again. I admire it. I think it, you know, obviously all the great reviews that it's getting, deservedly so, especially about the performances. But I like you guys, I just don't want to sit through this thing. I never want to sit through this thing ever again. So,
yep.
Anyway, but beautiful stuff, though. There's some beautiful stuff in it. So anyway, that's Amour, not the most pleasant movie you're ever going to sit through. In fact, a pretty unpleasant film. you know, it's getting all kinds of accolades, and I know a lot of people, at this time of year, especially since the Academy Award nominations come out, there are tons of people out there who make it a point to try and see every film that's nominated. So I know there's a huge interest in this film. I think it's only playing at the Landmark, if I'm not mistaken.
Landmark, Century, and Evanston.
Oh, and also Evanston. Okay, so it's playing in those two theaters. Certainly a commendable film, but a tough one. An almost impossible movie to sit through without wanting to blow your head off. So if that's a recommendation for you, you know, there you go. All right. You guys hang on. We got a couple more movies to talk about here, and we'll get to those coming up. If you want to jump in with a question or a comment, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. More movie reviews and your calls coming up. We will also recap you on our best movies of the year and worst movies of the year, and we'll talk about the Oscar nominations. Nick DiGilio here live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower on the voice of Chicago 720 WGN. Midnight Movie Reviews with Colin and Eric from eFilmCritic.com. One more movie to review, and then we'll recap our top 10 lists, our best lists and worst lists, and we will talk about the Oscar nominations. Eric, Colin, welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Okay, Eric, why don't you tell us about Gangster Squad?
Okay, Gangster Squad is the latest film from Ruben Fleischer, who gave us the previous mention, 30 Minutes or Less, but also Zombieland. And this film takes place in the 30s, I believe, and right around the time of Mickey Cohen, who's obviously the chief gangster at the time, the movie played by Sean Penn. And the film stars Josh Brolin as a sort of idealistic detective who can't quite get the job done against Mickey Cohen and his stranglehold on the city of Los Angeles. So he's recruited by a politician, a politician or chief of police? Nick Nolte.
Chief of police. Yeah.
Chief of police,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Nick Nolte hires him to sort of, you know, take the gloves off, you know, take all the police restrictions off of him, and to assemble a team together to take down the big gangster in the big town. Does this sound familiar to anyone? Okay. The team he gets together includes Ryan Gosling, who's a sort of a ladies' man detective that entirely interested in doing everything for the greater good. And also Anthony Mackie and Robert Patrick and Giovanni Ribisi. Emma Stone plays the mole of the gangster's mole of Mickey Cohen that begins a relationship with Ryan Gosling. Then the movie, you know, pretty much settles into trying to be the idiot's version of The Untouchables. And when I say the idiot's version, I mean just that. This is a movie that really cannot decide what direction it wants to take. It can't decide whether it wants to be just sort of a really kind of goofy, fun, you know, movie in the gangster tradition with a lot of style, in the way that Zombieland was for the zombie film, or if it's trying to actually take the material very straight, in the manner of, say, an L.A. Confidential. Which there's a lot of, this movie owes a lot of debt to that movie as well. And so it kind of, you know, tries to do both, but not really do either. So you just have this sort of this mishmash of a lot of characters, you know, doing the untouchable thing and talking tough guy dialogue and shootouts with action sequences that are not very well defined, not very exciting, not even like fun violent or shocking violent, although there is some shocking violence early in the movie. It's just, I mean, this is just a gigantic disappointment, and it goes past disappointment to just plain bad. The Ruben Fleischer showed a lot of promise with Zombieland, but he has certainly not followed up with anything of interest. We may be looking at a one-hit wonder on our hands.
Yeah. All right, Colin?
Yeah, like Eric said, this is... you know, I think judging by the list of talents that signed on to do this movie, it must have looked good on paper. It must have looked like it was going to be fun. And, you know, from the director of Zombieland, hey, maybe it has potential. But Eric's right. It goes from just being incompetent to just being bad. And, you know, it feels like the script has one aspiration, you know, which is to be like an L.A. Confidential type of thing. And, you know, Ruben Fleischer has another aspiration, but it's a little unclear as to what his aspiration is, because he's not winking at the audience. But the whole thing just feels kind of schizophrenic, and the actors don't seem to have anywhere to go with it either. Sean Penn is embarrassing in it. You know, last week one of our subcategories was, you know, biggest waste of an actor or actress, and this movie is an early candidate for 2013. The whole cast here is wasted. So it's pretty painful to watch. This is definitely disappointing, especially just given the talent that's on display here in terms of the cast. It's a big no for me.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. It's a bad movie. And monumentally silly, I think. You know, you could take the story. See, you know, obviously the inspiration here is Brian De Palma's The Untouchables, which I think is a great film, and unapologetically over the top, the way that a lot of Brian De Palma's movies are, and yet still,
right,
but still had an emotional, you know, emotional core that the audience could identify with, where you're rooting for Costner and these guys to take down De Niro. So I love that movie, and clearly this is the movie that Ruben Fleischer aspires to try and make, and it just completely fails miserably. There's also a lot of L.A. Confidential, as you mentioned, in this movie as well. Acting is completely stiff and boring. Brolin is the only one who seems to be above the material. It seems like Brolin is the only one who kind of gets away unscathed in this. Of course, I'll watch Emma Stone do anything, you know.
Gosling's not terrible.
No, he's not. It's just that Penn is terrible. Penn is really bad.
Yes.
And Emma Stone, I could watch do anything. And this is essentially, that's all you're doing here, is just watching her do anything.
Yes.
It's really incredibly violent. They did have to completely change one of the massacre scenes in this movie because it involved the gangsters shooting through a movie screen in a crowded movie theater. And since what happened in Aurora, Colorado happened in July, they cut that scene and then reshot a different sequence, but I don't think it really matters. None of it really works. It's, and again, I mean, what makes this movie so monumentally disappointing is indeed the cast. I mean, this is an incredible cast. There are so many great actors and actresses in this movie, and they've got nothing to do. Like I said, I think Brolin is the only one who really sort of brings it, at least in certain scenes. Gosling is always interesting to watch, but you know, like Nolte's wasted. Everybody else in this movie that are so interesting and great character actors and who could really inject life into a really bad script just don't do it here. It just seems like a mess to me. It also seems recut, and I'm not surprised that it's coming out in the middle of January after seeing it. You know, I was a little bit surprised. Was this supposed to come out earlier?
September, right after the shootings.
Right. So it was supposed to come out September.
They reshot into the Chinatown sequence.
Right. So, and it doesn't work. It's a bad movie. There's no question about it. One of the first major disappointments of 2013.
Yeah.
Is this movie. I mean, seriously, one of the biggest disappointments, and we're only, 12 days into the year. So, all right, Colin, Eric, hang on. Grab your best of and worst of lists. We're going to recap those and then talk about the Academy Awards. You guys hold on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Eric and Colin, and we are going to take a break. We got the news, and then afterwards we'll jump into the best and worst movies of 2012, and we will go over the Academy Award nomination.